We're going to start looking at an end times review, update, however you want to look at it. I'm always learning things about end times. There's always, you know, you got ideas and then there's more information, events develop. First, we just finished going through 1 Timothy for months. So just anybody who's watching online, we're not like an end time cult group. We have been doing verse by verse teaching through Timothy on Monday nights, Colossians and Genesis on Tuesday night. But just with so many things taking place in the world right now, and the fact that we do believe, just like there was a flood in the days of Noah, that there will be a second coming, that Jesus will physically return to the earth. And Jesus himself, the Old Testament prophesied, the New Testament refers to, there's an entire book of Revelation talking about events leading up to the second coming of Christ, which will be, I think, an actual physical event, that there's some things that the Bible tells us about and does tell us to be alert, to be aware. It talks about like watching. In other words, I would say it's a mistake to get too crazy on end times and only focus on end times. But it is just the baddest mistake, if not worse, if you want to go which one's worse, is to just ignore it and say something like, things will just go on like they always have. That is the voice of a false prophet, according to Peter. In the end times, things will always go on as they always have. Nothing's going to change. No, things are going to change, and it's on schedule as God has planned. We're going to look at today on pre-trib events. We're going to lay a little bit of a foundation. I'm going to go over some assumptions that I'm going to go through. We'll keep picking things up. I'm not sure how many weeks we're going to do this, probably until you stop showing up, and then I'll switch subjects. But pre-trib events, if we could do this real quickly, a little timeline, of course. This is a timeline of history. We've got Jesus coming back right here at this point in history, unknown. We do not know when that is. After that is going to be, apparently, according to my understanding, a 1,000-year kingdom reign on earth. And we can get into more details about that. And understand, I realize, everything I say has got a counterpoint or three or four variety of viewpoints that you can look at. And I consider those many times. Because sometimes there's things that I'm working through. There's going to be a 7-year period right here that we can get details on, and I've got it on different books and online, different teachings, called the tribulation, 7-year period, the 70th week of Daniel's prophecy. Before that time, there's what we call right here the church age, which is a mystery age that was revealed in Jesus' parables and in Paul's teaching, and this is going on. Now, right now, this is where we're at. How long this goes, we do not know the length of this. We do know history. We do know that Jesus came in 30 A.D., so we've got a definite date right here, 30 A.D. He died on the cross. Now you can debate 33 A.D., 30 A.D. You've got different, you know, trying to figure out exactly the day and the year. But I go with 30 A.D. Daniel saw prophecy of what is called the age of the Gentiles. Jesus, the age of the Gentiles, is Jesus refers to it. Daniel saw prophecies about it. And the idea was, way back in the beginning, here's creation, here's the flood, Tower of Babel, here's the call of Abraham. Abram was called, and God gave him a covenant. We'll look real quickly at some covenants here. Not very much time, just mention them. And this covenant with Abraham was, he was going to make a nation out of Abraham that was going to bless all the other nations. So that Abraham, in a sense, was one of the last nations, maybe the last nation, I'm not sure. There's already nations before Abraham. They'd gone astray. God calls Abram and says, I'll make a great nation out of you, and you will bless all the other nations. Then comes Moses and the deliverance from Egypt, and they came into the promised land. And then comes David. David was given a promise that his son would sit on the throne of Israel forever. He was going to have a descendant that would reign forever. And then his son Solomon, who was not the promised son, but a son that came after him, built the temple. And the temple then was built. Israel's in the land, worshiping in the temple. But in 586 B.C., Babylon came in, according to Isaiah, Jeremiah, other prophets, Habakkuk, and they destroyed the temple. The temple was destroyed, and Israel was taken into captivity, and this began the age of the Gentiles. And the age of the Gentiles is going to continue here. Now, Israel had a promise They disobeyed. They went into captivity. Their temple was destroyed. But from this time on, from here all the way through until Jesus returns, they're going to be under Gentile occupation. First of all, it's Babylon, and they're in Babylon. Then comes Persia. Cyrus sends them back, but they're still part of the Persian Empire. Their leadership, their governors were put in place by Cyrus or the Persians. After that, they're under the occupation of the Greeks, including the Ptolemies and the Seleucids that come after Alexander. And then they fall to, or then the world empires turn to Rome. This is all detailed in Daniel's prophecies in Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7, talking about the statue that the head of gold, the chest of silver, the waist of bronze, the legs of iron. We'll look at that quickly. And then also in chapter 7, the beast. You're going to see the lion, the bear, the leopard, and eventually an iron beast that's different than all the others. Now, this church age right here, in a sense, I don't want to say causes confusion, but Rome then, Jesus was resurrected, the church age began, and Israel was destroyed in 70 AD, according to Jesus' own prophecy. Jesus basically said it's when it's going to happen. He says, on the way to the cross, they're crying for him. He says, don't cry for me, cry for your children. He says, they're the ones that are going to reap the harvest of your rejection of the Messiah. And exactly 40 years later, the temple is destroyed again. Now, interesting, the same date that it was destroyed on in 586 BC, it's destroyed on the same day in the calendar year in 70 AD. And again, there's no way you can manufacture that. This is Babylonians, this is Romans. And it's the middle of a war. You know, they didn't have like a holiday and decide when they're going to burn it down. It just happened. Nonetheless, that falls in 70 AD. So now Israel is dispersed again. They had another revolution in 132 to 135, the second Jewish revolt. In 70 AD, they lost their temple. And this whole time, they're occupied by the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans. Remember, when Jesus went to trial, he appeared before the high priest, but before they could execute him, they had to take him to who? Pilate, the Roman governor, to get permission, because they were running their own country, but they were just like doing under an umbrella of Roman occupation. Between 66 and 70 AD, they broke away, and Jerusalem, for a moment, for 4 years, was under Jewish control, and they overthrew the Romans, and then the Romans came in and demolished them. In 132 to 135, they did it again. They overthrew the Romans out of Jerusalem. We're in control. And then Rome came in, plowed the place, never let the Jews come back, renamed the land Palestine or Palestinians after the Palestinian or the Philistines. And that's when the land of Palestine, if you want to know the history, that is when it was land of Philistia or the land of the Palestines and the Philistines. And that is the pagan name for Israel, after they thought they got rid of them for the final time. They're gone, they're dispersed. Okay, and now here, so this is Israel, but the whole time this is happening, the church, you know, between 30 and 70 AD, you've got Paul's ministry. He's writing letters to the churches. The church is expanding, goes to Rome, goes to Spain, goes to Gaul, you know, 135. The church is now in the second century as a church, and the church is up and running. By 350, let's say 312 AD, you're going to have Constantine is coming in and making it Christianity the religion of the Roman Empire. And so you got Christianity and the church happening here while Israel's going into dispersion. So the question here is, this fourth beast, Rome, or the legs of iron, do they stop and then we just take an interruption, just wait? Or are the age of the Gentiles continuing? The answer to that question is, the age of the Gentiles doesn't stop with the death of Christ or the resurrection or the starting of the church or the destruction of the temple. The age of the Gentiles, it continues the whole way through this. In fact, we are still in the days of the age of the Gentiles. For example, they'll trample on the Temple Mount throughout the age of the Gentiles. And I've got pictures of, right here's the Temple Mount, of myself just walking around on the Temple Mount like a Gentile, trampling on the holy places of Israel, because during this age of the Gentiles, the Temple Mount will be trampled on by the Gentiles. Now, I wasn't there being disrespectful or anything, but there were some kids up there playing soccer, which I thought was interesting. But nonetheless, that's where we're at right here. Israel is there waiting. The church is here functioning, but the age of the Gentiles is all taking place. this is going to culminate in several things. Now, there's a thousand things to say right here. What I want to look at today and begin laying a foundation for is the rapture of the church. It's called the rapture of the church is going to happen where the church is going to be removed. All kinds of different viewpoints on this. If it's an individual rapture, you die and go to heaven. If Jesus is going to come back and the whole body of Christ is going to be taken away into heaven and then come back later. If we're going to meet the Lord in the air and then come back with him at the second coming. All kinds of views, but there's a rapture that's going to take place sometime during this period. People that teach the pre-trib rapture, meaning before this tribulation, the last 7 years begins, the church has to leave before they teach imminence. It's imminent, meaning the church could be raptured anytime. Nothing has to happen before the church could be raptured. It's like we're not waiting for the Antichrist to be revealed. The church could be raptured. We're not waiting for the covenant to be signed. The church could be raptured. We're not waiting for Israel to return from captivity. The church could be raptured anytime along this time period. Okay, that's fine. That would be called a pre-trib rapture. I'm not talking about the pre-trib rapture today. I'm not even talking about the rapture today. Because the rapture could take place during the tribulation, some people think. Some people think it would take place at the second coming, meet the Lord in the air on his way down. Some people think that. There's varieties of ways. We can talk about that later. I definitely reject the post-trib. The pre-trib I held to for many years, and it's still viable. I still wonder and look over my shoulder. I'm more of a mid-trib rapture, that the rapture is going to take place at the sixth seal. Some would call that pre-trib, the actual pre-trib or pre-wrath. Pre-wrath people teach a little bit different. They put it after that. I think it takes place with the appearing of the Lord in the air at the sixth seal. Now, Don't shut this off because you disagree. I'm not even going to talk about it today. And as we go through this, you're free to put the rapture wherever you want to. What I'm going to say is this. The events of the pre-trib events, the tribulation begins here. And the thing that, again, I think you, if you think about this, you would agree with it. What begins the 70th week? First of all, it's not the rapture. Now, there could be a pre-trib rapture, but the pre-trib rapture is not the key that kicks off the tribulation. It could happen right before it, but it could happen a month before or a year before. It could have happened any time, apparently, to the pre-trib crowd, because what kicks off the 70th week, the tribulation? The signing of the peace treaty. When the Antichrist signs a treaty or Israel signs a treaty with the Antichrist, according to Daniel, boom, you've just entered, you've re-engaged the countdown. And so understand when I say that, I'm not being blasphemous, I'm not being making fun of anything, but the pre-trib rapture, it may happen at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and they sign the peace treaty at 1:30 and you're in the tribulation. But the rapture at 1 o'clock doesn't begin, hypothetically. I'm not saying the rapture takes place at 1 o'clock, the day of the sign. Hypothetically, if it happens at 1 o'clock and they sign the treaty at 1:30, the tribulation began at 1:30 when the treaty was signed. Which means the rapture could take place in 1982 and they could sign the peace treaty in 2024. And the 70th week begins 2024, not whenever. So there's no, it could be simultaneous, it could be apart, it could be some other time. So we're talking about the last event before the tribulation begins is the signing of the treaty. So real quickly, we just made it real simple for you. I've got 12 things on here I'm going to show you today, 12 things that we could call pre-tribulation events in the Bible. Now, this is not me looking at CNN or Fox or whatever your favorite news or listening to someone online. This is what does the Bible say? Because Jesus says, watch. Jesus says, be awake. And whenever you say, be watch, you know, watch, Well, if you're just pre-trib, the rapture can happen at any time, and there's nothing we can, we just wait. It's like, what are you watching for? The secret rapture. So how can you see it? You can't. You're just, you're watching what? Well, if you believe in a pre-trib rapture, and it would be secret, you'd just vanish and meet the Lord in the air that no one ever sees him coming. You just mean, and that's fine. I thought that for a while. In fact, sometimes I go back and look and says, am I wrong? And I consider it again. In fact, I spent time this week looking at it again. And I'm unstable. Where am I at on this? Okay, I can justify that if you want me to. Now, but if you don't know when the pre-trib, what are you supposed to be watching? Well, these are the things you're to be watching. Number 12 on that list is the signing of the treaty. Now, please, I'm going to say some things that if you believe in the pre-trib rapture, you say, well, we're going to be raptured before the treaty signed, so we'll never see the treaty be signed. We'll never see the Antichrist if you're pre-trib rapture. You won't even know maybe who he is. Maybe you think it's Barack Obama. Maybe it's Donald Trump. Maybe it's Netanyahu. Maybe it's Putin. I don't know. Boom, you're out of here, and you'll never know for sure. And then, 20 minutes later, they sign the treaty or whatever. So, what are the events that we can be sure of that are signs coming? Well, right here, the number 12, the Antichrist signs a 7-year treaty with Israel, okay? But up on the top of this, I'm going to show you these. The things that indicate you are in the time before the tribulation. Not the time before the rapture. The rapture, if you're pre-trib, the rapture could happen anytime. It's imminent. You're not waiting for anything. But before the tribulation can begin, there's going to be world wars. I'll explain this. There's going to be famines. There's going to be earthquakes. Now, I've criticized this before, but I'm going to come back and explain it. There's going to be a worldwide regathering of Israel. Two regatherings of Israel. I'll show you. There's a regathering of Israel in unbelief. Unregenerate, not born again. Now, because they're following the law of Moses and they're following all their feasts, doesn't mean they're believing Jews. Because if they've rejected Jesus, they are still unbelievers. Yes, but they're so religious. Right. So's name a church, name a cult. They're so religious. Right. But they have rejected Jesus Christ. So they'll be regathered. And that's when you look at Israel today, it's like, Israel, they're back in the land. And I'm excited. I've visited there. I've talked to them. But they want nothing to do with Jesus. They think you are deceived. Just like I think a Mormon or a Seventh-day Adventist possibly or a Jehovah Witness is deceived. And you follow Joseph Smith? Come on, man. That's a joke. The Jews look at me like, come on, man, Jesus, he's a joke. They don't, it's like, what are you doing? You're deceived. Okay, I don't think I'm deceived following Jesus. I think the Jews don't fully understand. I do think Joseph Smith is a joke. Now, the Jews are looking at the church as if we are wrong. So when they are gathered back, there's going to be a regathering. Ezekiel, I'll read you the verses if I hurry. They'll be regathered out of wrath, which means from the Babylonian, Persian, Roman dispersions. They'll be, you can throw Assyrians in there if you want to. They'll be regathered from wrath for wrath. In other words, they're being gathered from these Old Testament, even New Testament dispersions, back to the land of Israel. Why? For wrath. What wrath? The tribulation. And then during that, it's called a furnace, a fire, where they're going to be purified, which will then create a second regathering in faith. The Jews that are going back to Israel today, now you're going to have some, they believe in Jesus, but the vast majority are coming back in Israel today. They are not believers. They've been regathered from the judgments, as Ezekiel, other prophets said, Moses talked about it, but they've been gathered as unbelievers concerning their faith in Jesus Christ. But they're here for the purpose of they're going to enter into a furnace, and in that furnace they're going to be refined and come out on the other side going, okay, now we believe. And they'll be regathered in faith in the land of Israel. That's got to take place. Does that make sense at all? World wars, famines, earthquakes, a regathering of Israel. Then Israel has to regain control of Jerusalem. But just like they gained control of Jerusalem during Roman occupation or during the Persian occupation, they'll regain it, but they'll be under the Gentile time period. There was times during the Greek period where they took control of Jerusalem by themselves. They threw off the Greeks, the Maccabean revolt, and they controlled it themselves, even made peace treaties with other nations, until finally in 63 BC, Rome had to come in and stop their own civil wars because they were fighting with each other. So they threw off the Greeks, had a moment of control of Jerusalem for themselves during the age of the Gentiles, but they lost in 63 BC. And then they threw off control in 66 AD and thought they controlled it for themselves. Rome smashed them. They did it again in 132. Rome smashed them in 135. Well, they've come back into the land, and they are going to need to get to a place where they, as a nation, control Jerusalem themselves. Now, they came back in 1948. The War of Independence in 48-49, they regained control of Jerusalem as the state of Israel. A nation in unbelief controlling Jerusalem again, but they only controlled the west side. They didn't control the east side of Jerusalem, which included the Temple Mount. So they're going to have to regain control of Jerusalem, but then they're going to have to, because they're going to build the third temple, we'll see the verses, they're going to have to gain control of the Temple Mount and East Jerusalem. That is something else that's going to have to take place. Then, so if you want to go through there right here, and I'm going to be able to show you, those first six, if you go back into the days of the Reformation, you go back to the Crusades, these things were not, in a sense, reality. There was wars, but there were not what we'd call world wars. I'll explain this. There were famines, but not a worldwide lack of food. There'd be famines in places, but not like worlds out of food. Earthquakes, I'm going to show you a chart here, they're going to be increasing like unprecedented. There's always been earthquakes, but the last 100 years, it's gone crazy. The last 30 years, it's gone crazy. I'll show you. Really, I'm going to show you. And then Israel in 1948, oh yeah, they came back to the land. They took control of Jerusalem. In 67, they took control of the Temple Mount, gave it back. The next things that take place is there's going to be an invasion of Israel as a land from the north, a northern invasion, a northern alliance, the Gog and Magog battle. We'll talk about that. So this is something that happened before the tribulation. Now again, you're free to say, well, I think that northern invasion takes place halfway through the tribulation. Okay, some people do. I think some people would say that invasion from the north is the Battle of Armageddon. Okay, now again, it's not. I think it's not. There are two different battles. Armageddon is this. The northern invasion is something completely different. But you could say, well, I think they're the same thing. Okay, well, then that's going to take place here. Something that takes place during the transition period between when Jesus returns and before the millennium set up, then there's going to be another, that's going to be the Gog and Magog. We definitely know there's a reference to it at the end of the 1,000 years, which is, again, a different event, I think. So I've got to put the Gog and Magog somewhere, and I think it's going to take place before the tribulation. Again, so you could cross it off. See, I disagree with Galen. Okay, then cross that one off. So we're waiting to see the invasion of Israel from the Northern Alliance. Again, this is I've got to go back and show you these verses. But Daniel 7 and Daniel 2 talk about Rome, and Rome is an imperial nation up until 360 after Constantine, when they broke into the east and the west, and then you got the two legs, and you've got Constantinople and Rome. Rome becomes the Western world, eventually moves to, when the barbarians come in, eventually they move to France, then up into Europe, and the Constantinople becomes the Eastern world, and you can see it in Christendom. You've got the Roman Catholic Church, which is the Western Church, and you've got the Greek Orthodox Church, which is the Eastern Church. Now, we would say, well, we're not Catholic, we're not Orthodox. Right, but you are Protestants, which you have branched off of the Roman Catholic Church and continue, basically, you hold a lot of their basic theology. You are Catholics, but protesting against the structure of the Catholic Church. You are the Western Church. So even the church reflects the division of the world into two parts, the East and the West. Now, from that East and the West, according to the beast's vision, where he sees the lion, the bear, the leopard with four heads that divides into four, and then he sees an iron beast, and the iron beast is going to, it says, dominate the whole world. Now, it's easy to say, well, that must be Rome. It is, if you're just, you know, going through it and just teaching through eschatology, Rome conquered the whole world, but it did this. It had less territory than the Greeks. It didn't go as far as Alexander, who didn't go as far as Persia, who didn't go as far as Nebuchadnezzar. So those empires, Babylon is bigger than Persia, which is bigger than Greece, which is bigger than Rome. It's like, well, how's, which means when it says they conquer the whole world, after being divided into two, east and west, or the two legs, it says the beast, it went out and dominated the whole world. We are yet waiting for that part of the Gentile age where the whole world is dominated by a one world government. So we're talking about a one world government where the east and the west somehow morph together. There's tension, whatever, they eventually morph together where we've got a one world government for a moment. Because what happens to that one world government is at the end of both of those visions, the statue with the head of gold, the chest of silver, the waist of bronze, the legs of iron, feet of clay and iron, but what's on those feet? 10 toes, which are 10 kingdoms. Go to now the animals, you're going to have the lion, the bear, the witch in the wardrobe. No, the okay, whatever. Okay, you got the lion, the bear, the leopard, the beast. That out of those beasts, it says 10 horns pop up, and there those are 10 kings. So after the east and the west, the phase of the last, the fourth beast, the east and the west, the long legs, there's going to be a time of a one world government, and then that's not going to work. You see, it's not going to work, and they're going to somehow try to. I'm speculating. They're going to realize we can't have a one world government. Just like you can't have socialism. It's like someone's got to be in charge of something. Everybody's just like standing around waiting. And so they're going to probably try to recreate nationalism and say, okay, we're going to divide it into 10 groups. The world will be divided into 10 kings, kind of 10 nations. Now, people have said for years those 10 are the European common market or the European market or something. That's fun to talk about. And you got to put that on the board and discuss that because that's Rome going up into Europe. But that's Rome going up into Europe. That's one part of the Western world. You still got North America. You still got South America. Then you got the whole Eastern world. So if anything, the European common market or whatever, the European market, the union, that would possibly could become one of the 10 kings. You see, because there's still got to be a king in China. There's got to be a king in South America. There's still got to be, okay, now there's 10 kings. But of those 10 kings, then a little horn is going to come up and take out 3 of those kings, uproot them, and overthrow them. And now you're going to have 7 kings plus this one king. And that is going to be the rise of the Antichrist. He is going to be the one who signs the treaty. So in review, and I'm going to read a bunch of verses to you, say the same thing again. Before, and I'll show you the verses, before the tribulation, and once that happens, that's not Jesus' return, that's the beginning of the 7 years of tribulation. Before we can begin the 7 year of tribulation, you're going to have world wars, unlike you've ever had before in history, famines, unlike you've ever had before in history, earthquakes, unlike you've ever had before in history, a regathering of Israel in unbelief, to bring them into a place of the furnace that will cause them to be regathered in faith. That's to happen. Israel will control Jerusalem. Israel will control the Temple Mount. There'll be an invasion from the north of the National Alliance from the north. There'll be a one-world government, which will morph into 10 kingdoms, trying to recover survival, which will then give room for one king to arise, take out 3 kings, the Antichrist, who then establishes a period that looks like peace and safety, and in that is going to involve the 7-year peace treaty. So my friends, what I'm saying here is if you are pre-trib, you're going to have to hold to the ideal of the imminence of the pre-trib rapture. The church could be raptured anytime. It could happen now. It could happen next week. It could happen anytime. It doesn't, the rapture of the church doesn't mean the tribulation begins. What means the tribulation begins is you've got to have the seven-year peace treaty. But before that, you're going to have Antichrist, who's establishing peace and safety, who comes out of a 10-kingdom confederacy of the world government that broke down out of a one-world government that came after Israel had been invaded by the Northern Alliance, which comes after Israel having entered the land, taken control of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, which has to take place after a serious increase in earthquakes, famines, and world wars. So that is what we're waiting for. I would say this. We have seen world wars. Famines, we've seen famines. I think it's going to get much worse. Just look at the way the world's functioning right now. Earthquakes. I'm going to show you a video and some charts. And then Israel was definitely regathered in 1948. They took control of Jerusalem. They took control of the Temple Mount in 1967 and gave it back to the Muslims because, or the Muslims, Islam, because they were basically secular. And they realized if we have control of the Temple Mount, the faithful Jews are going to want to come in and build a temple. And then we got all kinds of problems. So just, we don't want that because they had control. See, right there's a dome of the rock sitting right there. They had control. They won that in war, just like they won other things in war. Arabs invaded. They drove them out and took more territory. And in 67, the Six-Day War, they ended up at the end of the war. They occupied that. So they could have built the temple. They could have built the temple in 1967 on their own legal property. They says, we'll let the Islam state, you can oversee the Temple Mount. We'll let you have jurisdiction because it's like, we got some fanatics in our group here that they'll think and bulldoze that Dome of the Rock and then we're going to have it, you know. So, or something like that happened. But I was in the Western Wall tunnels talking to someone, a Jewish woman says, we had control. We do not know why. In 1967, we could have built the temple. But they went into negotiations after the War of 67 and they came back and says, well, Islam has control of the Temple Mount. Jews control all around it, but they've got control. It's like, why would you do that? Well, I think it's timing. I don't know why it happened, but you can walk. In fact, the Jews even have to have permission to go up on the Temple Mount. They can get in trouble for praying on the Temple Mount with the Muslim authorities. Nonetheless, but what we're waiting for right now, what I think you need to see happen is starting with number 7. You're looking for, historically, an invasion of Israel from the north of a national alliance. You're looking for the formation of a one-world government. Now, I'm not sure how long it's going to last, or are we functioning in a framework of a one-world government right now? We're just all pretending we're going to vote in November, and we're pretending we have freedom, and it's like, but there's already someone running it right now. I mean, you know. But whatever that is, however that's formed, that one-world government, it's not going to work, and it's going to be broken down into 10 kings or 10 kingdoms, which will then try to function and control the world. One guy will rise up and take out 3 of them and control 3/10 of that jurisdiction, 3 kingdoms himself, and that's when he makes a peace treaty with Israel. So before you can see, the tribulation is not going to start this afternoon. Unless Israel's invaded, a one-world government forms, breaks down into 10 kingdoms, the Antichrist arises and signs a treaty with Israel. So that's kind of what we're waiting for. I know it's disappointing. It's like, but the good news, if you're pre-trib, the rapture can happen anytime. Because the rapture is not a sign of any of these things. If you're pre-trib. If you think I am pre-wrath, I think it's going to take place in the tribulation. Again, and I'm there. I wrote a book about it, but I'm willing to change my opinion on it. Okay, any questions on that? And then I'm going to start shooting through some information. Is that confusing at all? I mean, that's a lot of information. I mean, you got to have a little bit of a background. I mean, you know, if it's the first time you come to Bible class and I'm saying tribulation 70th week, you know, it's like, what are you talking about? Yes, ma'am. No, there's different views on Matthew 24 and Luke 21. What is it, Mark 13? They think it's, and we'll read through it. Some think there would be preterist, and they think Jesus is talking to the Jews and the desecration of the temple that's going to take place was Titus burning the temple down, and it's all fulfilled. The predators think it's all done. And now you've got to, how are you going to wrap this up? Like, I've got a 1,000-year kingdom reign here. They think all this has already taken place, and we're in that 1,000-year kingdom reign, which is a metaphor for the church is going to now establish peace and godliness on the earth. And that would be a form of amillennialism or postmillennialism. If Jesus is coming back, he's going to come back after the church has established peace on the earth. And so that would be one way of looking at Matthew 24. And then every one of the verses, of course, can be interpreted differently. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so whenever everything I say, in fact, if we look, go ahead, any other questions or thoughts? Okay, I'm going to go through just some notes, lay some foundation, and we're going to go back to this. First thing out there, and we talked about this on Tuesday night or Monday nights, mysteries. Paul used the word mystery or mysterion to refer to hidden truths. Mysteries in the New Testament include the incarnation of Jesus Christ, the divine indwelling, things that were not known before. The church is now a union of the Jews and the Gentiles. Israel is blinded for a while. They cannot see these things. They've been set aside. The rapture was a mystery until Paul revealed it. And then Jesus himself revealed in 7 kingdom parables what this age, he talks here in 30 AD, talking about what was going to take place next in the age to come. And we went through that on Monday nights. So those were mysteries. So some of these things have been revealed. Then in point C, the mysteries that are not yet revealed is in, like in 2 Thessalonians, the mystery of lawlessness. And that involves the Antichrist. That's still a mystery. The mystery of lawlessness is already at work, but what does it mean? Well, when it fully comes to pass, we'll understand it. Point two on page two. Peter, writing in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 10 through 12, the prophets tried to look into these things, Peter says. He says, quoting Peter, concerning this salvation, the prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours, talking about Jeremiah, Isaiah, Daniel, they searched and inquired carefully, inquiring what person or time the Spirit of Christ in them was indicating when he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the subsequent glories. Meaning this is the Old Testament prophets. They wrote things down. They read each other's material. And they're trying, just like I'm trying to see and understand this, they are trying to see and understand the first coming of Christ. It says, it was revealed to them that they were serving not themselves but you in the things that have now been announced. In other words, they said, you don't need to know. You don't need to know. In other words, there's things we're going to talk about, but things, the reason I'm like, I could be here, it's like, am I wrong? Well, yeah, I'm either wrong or right, but you really don't know. That's why sometimes you get people looking at this and they've got arguments, but it's like, there's not a, I don't want to say there's not a right answer. There's not a revealed answer. It's like you're taking a test, but the teacher's not showing you the answer sheet. All the kids work out the problems. They got this answer. This group's got that answer. Well, which one's right? It's like the teacher says, I'm not going to show you the answer. It's like, well, you just sit and wait. You're waiting for the test to be graded, if that's a fair way of saying it. These other points. Point three, no man knows the day or hour. So right there. You, at some point, I'm going to teach, but I've got to stop. No one knows. I think you're wrong. Well, yeah, I probably am, because no one knows exactly. But Jesus says, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Matthew 24, 44. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Now, for me, this is interesting because he's talking to the disciples in Matthew 24, and he's telling them the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. The coming of the Son of Man is the second coming. It's the appearing of the Lord in the air. And he says, you will not know at what time this is. If he's talking about the rapture, now the rapture is not the coming of the Son of Man. It's the appearing of the Son of Man in the air and the church being gathered to him. But it's interesting, he's talking to them like, you're not going to know the second coming. And they would look at each other like, oh, why do we care? We're going to be raptured already. Why are you telling us this, Jesus? Well, maybe because you're not going to be raptured already. Maybe you're going to be living during this time not knowing when the Son of Man is going to appear and you're going to meet him in the air. Now, we know he comes at the end, but that's when his feet land on the Mount of Olives. His feet land on the Mount of Olives and he engages in physical, combat. But before that, he could, in the sixth seal, he appears in the sky, in the atmosphere, and everyone sees him. The world sees him. They run and hide from him. But at the end of the tribulation, they're at war with him. I mean, they've regrouped and are fighting him in battle. So the appearing of the Son of Man doesn't necessarily mean that he's coming straight back to the earth. He could appear in the air, just like the rapture. We'll meet him in the air. But instead of disappearing, we may just stay with him there in the atmosphere as he pours out the trumpets and the bowls. Again, a lot of moving parts here. If you disagree, I respect that. But no one knows the day or hour. Matthew 25:13, point 3c. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. Acts 1:7. This is one of the great ones. The disciples asked him after the resurrection, and he's been on the earth with them for some 40 days, and asked them, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel? Okay, are we done with this stupid age of the Gentiles, and now is Israel going to be restored, have the Temple Mount, throw off the Romans, and are we going to establish the kingdom of God on earth? That's a fair question. I mean, he just died on the cross, came back from the dead, been walking around for 40 days. It's like, well, we've never seen, this is the biggest event in history. So now, are we going to establish the kingdom? It is not for you to know the times or seasons that the Father has fixed by his own authority. And then he went up into heaven and disappeared. It's like, I mean, his last words, it's not for you to know. I'll be back. Well, he didn't even say that. The angels had to tell him, the same Jesus you saw leave will come back the same way he left. It's like, but what are we going to do? You're going to wait in Jerusalem until you receive power. Then you're going to preach the gospel of the kingdom. And it's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, it'd be a great movie scene. Because you're thinking this is great, and the leader is not even telling the people. He just says, it's not for you to know. So here I am today teaching you about end times on the foundation that it is not for me to know the times or seasons that the Father is fixed by his own authority. So make sure you take notes. It's like, and so we've got some information, but the information is not for us to know. The information is for us to watch and be awake. Two different things. So I'm up here, I'm not telling you I know, because that contradicts a variety of scriptures. In fact, my understanding is still, in fact, if it's in the mystery stage, even Jeremiah, Isaiah, and Daniel, it's like, we don't understand it. Daniel ends the book of his book asking the angel questions. Yeah, but, and the maybe answers one question, but the angel eventually tells Daniel, go your way. You're gonna sleep and be risen for the resurrection and receive your light and inheritance. These things, you don't need to know, Daniel. Go. But Daniel's like, yeah, but I don't understand. Daniel, you don't need to understand. And so that was Daniel who wrote the book of Daniel. So here I am. I've got to embrace the same thing. It's not for me to know. I don't understand the whole outcome, but I do know enough to keep watching that, hey, we're heading here. And that's the command to us is be awake, be watching. Not to mean no, but anyway, and we will talk about these things. Point four, do not be taken by surprise. And this is on the other side. Now concerning the times and seasons, brothers, 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 1 through 7, you have no need to have anything written to you, for you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night, while people are saying there is peace and security. See, that's where the world's got to get to. See, we're not at the place where we're saying peace and security. See, we're not there yet. So it's like, well, it could happen anytime. Wait, if we look at this, there's going to be a one world government that is then morphed into a 10 kingdoms with one king rising, taking out three. And then there's this feeling of, okay, we've got this figured out. And you got this one great world leader who signs a treaty with Israel. And when the world says, okay, no more COVID, no more worrying about the communists, no more worrying about the terrorists, no more worried about the Republicans or the white supremacists. It's like, we've got this all taken care of. It's like, and then all of a sudden, welcome to the tribulation. So again, if I'm saying anything today, if I'm teaching anything today, which again is disappointing, because when you hear it have an end times class, you want to walk away thinking, he could be coming back anytime this afternoon. It's like, oh, it could be right now. And I'm saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're waiting for an invasion from the north. Then we're waiting for the establishment of one world government, which then has to collapse into 10 kings, which then has to be three overthrown by the Antichrist, which everyone loves. And he's like the world leader. And he signs a peace treaty. and now the end can come. Well, that's a lot of things to happen before next week, and we may be back in class next week. So a lot of times when you leave an end times class, you think, well, man, that was, I'm going to be raptured out of here by today, you know. So I'm kind of saying, whoa, slow down. We may be here for another two or three decades, you know. But no man knows the day or hour. I also said earlier that, you know, we could see, you know, the tribulation begin in April, you know. But anyway, I don't know. But do not be taken by surprise. And Revelation point 4b, Revelation 1, 1 through 3, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave to him to show his servants the things that must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John. He made it known. There are things that can be known. That's what I'm trying to teach, the things that he made known. Who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ, even to all that saw. Blessed is he who reads aloud the words of this prophecy. Right there. Blessed are you who read this. No, blessed are you who reads aloud the words of this prophecy. And blessed are those who hear and who keep what is written, for the time is near. So the one who would be reading would be the person reading the letter in a church, and the person that is hearing is the congregation of the group that's meeting, probably in a home church, because John himself is not like in a church office. He's on the Isle of Patmos living in a cave. He says he was in the Isle of Patmos. He doesn't say on, he says in. And so they're hearing. Okay, and then point five, do not be deceived. There's verses on that. Here's some point three. Here's some presuppositions. I got two bullet points. This study assumes the following concepts to be correct. I'm going to read through a bunch of them. But then next, these assumptions may be wrong and may be viewed differently. Number one, there is a beginning and an end of the current age. Okay, that's an assumption. There's a beginning and there's an end. Life continues forever, meaning my life is not going to end. It's just going to be moved somewhere else. I'm going to move into the presence of Christ, or you could be moved into damnation. But your life is not going to end. Eschatology is more than the human spirit going to heaven after you die. End times, well, I died and went to heaven. Right, but what's going to happen to the earth? What's going to happen to creation? What about judgment? What about the resurrection? There's some things that take place. Point four, Jesus comes to earth two times. Jesus physically comes to earth two times. The God became a man and is going to manifest God in man twice. Once, the first coming, to be a sacrifice as the Savior. Second, to be a man who rules the earth. We are waiting for the second coming. Israel was a nation. Israel is set aside. And Israel will return as a nation. Point six, God controls nations and controls history by working through a client nation. Often that client nation does not fully realize God's plan or God's work. They're just being used by God. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, this is right out of the Bible. Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome. And then after Rome in parentheses, I don't know, Rome. Is it England? Is it the United States? I don't know. That's kind of like who's God using now? He definitely used England. He definitely used the United States. He can use other nations. But eventually it's going to be the kingdom of the beast. Number seven, there are periods of seasons or times or years. There are ages or dispensations. And I've got them written down. We've talked about that. The garden before the flood, after the flood, after Babel, Abraham, church age, the tribulation, and then the kingdom age. There are covenants. God made covenants with Abraham, saying you're going to be a nation. Made a covenant with Abraham and Moses and Joshua. There'll be a land that's going to be given to you. They made a covenant with David that David's son will sit on the throne and rule. And then there's going to be a new covenant. This new covenant is what God is waiting for Israel to accept, the new covenant. Point nine, there is a promised Messiah that is promised to come, a man that's going to come that will defeat Satan. You can see it these ways right here. The seed of the woman in Genesis 3:15. It's got to be the seed of Noah in Genesis 7. It's got to be the seed of Abraham in Genesis 12, Acts 3, Galatians 3. It's got to be of the tribe of Judah, Genesis 49. It's got to be through David, 2 Samuel 7. So that matches with Jesus, but there's this man that's been promised. Now, the Messiah is coming, and we know his genealogy. He's going to be born of a woman. He'll be a man from this line. But there's also an opponent known as the false Messiah coming. And I've got, he will oppose God, oppose the people of God, desecrate the temple. He'll be, put up the abomination of desolation, and is of Roman origin. There are four clear forerunners. Pharaoh was a type of this. He did those first two. Nebuchadnezzar, although I think he ended up being a believer, he did the first three. Opposed God, oppressed the people of God, and desecrated the temple by tearing it down. Antiochus Epiphanes, he was not a believer. He does the first four, desecrate the temple and set up the abomination. Titus, along with Pilate's help, as when he judged Jesus, does all five of them and is of Roman origin. And then the Antichrist will be all of those, including coming from Roman origin, whatever that. The people that the leader that comes from the people that destroyed the temple, a man, whoever destroyed the temple, that is where he comes from. So he comes from Rome, whatever the Antichrist is. And that's, again, we're not studying Antichrist. Okay, here's the tribulation, little chart of the tribulation, and all it's broken down. And for the sake of time now, I'm going to read, I really wanted to read some things out of the Bible for you. But in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 6, in fact, I will do that right now. Matthew 24, I'm looking at the clock. Matthew 24, 4 through 6. Jesus says, they ask him, tell us, they said, when will this happen and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Again, we've talked about this before, but let's move on. Verse 4, Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. So right there, the end is still to come. When you hear these things, false Christ, you hear of rumors of local wars, you hear of these things. This right here is not the end. This is life on earth, okay? But before he comes, there's going to be birth pains. And that goes into this next one. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Verse 7, now we switch subjects. You don't have to agree with this, but he just put an end. This is not the end. Now he continues with the list. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Now, birth pains. Birth pains, meaning this is what's beginning the, before the tribulation begins, there's going to be wars, kingdom against kingdom, nation against kingdom. There's going to be famine, and there's going to be earthquakes. Now, these are, once you start seeing this, now you are in the days leading up to the tribulation. You're going to have people lying about who Jesus is. You're going to have rumors of wars. You're going to have wars. That's world history. It's not the end. Don't worry about that. That's just life. But when you start seeing this kind of war, you start seeing this kind of famine, and you start seeing this kind of earthquake, these are the birth pains. It's not the end, but we're about to enter into the delivery of the end. And so that is what is being said right there on page 5. And I can, I'll come back to this and explain next week on nations rising against nation. That is a term of world wars. That is not just wars like the Romans fighting the Jews. That's like something we've never seen, but we saw it in the early 1900s. Famines and then earthquakes. Look at this. Is why I've got to cover this earthquakes today. Earthquakes. There's a chart on the bottom of page 6. First, I asked AI on Google. I Googled something and got some information. But there's a chart on the bottom of page 6 shows you the earthquakes from 1901 going on up to 2011. Do you see the increase in earthquakes? Now you've got another chart on page 7. This is from 1000 BC up to 2000 BC. Do you see the earthquakes increasing? I'm going to try to do this real quickly. And there's that chart. There's that earthquake chart right there. You can zoom in if you want to, Tony. And you guys are going to see something you've never seen in Generation Word Church before. You're going to see a video. Yeah, here we go. But you see that. And then this right here, again, the increase, 1000 BC, 1000 AD, 1500 AD, 1700, 1800, 1900, 2000. These are not Christian charts. These are probably people trying to prove global warming is destroying the planet or something. These are charts. And you say, well, they've been able to chart them better or something. Well, that's a consideration. Here's another. Oh, wait, that's the same one. There's that one. There's that AI information. Oh. This right here, I'm going to show you two videos. This is the last 100 years charted earthquakes. Last 100 years. Can everybody see okay? Watch this number, 1902, 1903, 1904, and you're going to see earthquakes up until the year 2000, and you're going to see the increase. You'll eventually be able to see, we talk on Tuesday nights about the continental plates breaking apart and the floods breaking up. You can start seeing the continental plates. I'm going to show this to you two times. This first one is for the first 100, or the last 100 years, or 1901 to 2000. Here we go again. There's no sound to it. 6, 7, 8. These are just the earthquakes that are taking place. Okay, World War I breaks out right now. World War I is over. They're starting to talk about Zionism. Israel's right here. We are right here. There's a tsunami. 1926, 27. Just watch the speed, how they increase. Again, there's always been earthquakes on the earth, but these charts show, if it's correct, you've never had earthquakes like this before on earth. 46, we're just finished World War II. And they see it speeding up. Now, we're not in 1960 yet. Eisenhower's president. JFK's not even shot yet. There, JFK gets shot. There he goes. Now you can see the continental plates right here and the fault lines. Here's Israel. 75. It was like fireworks now. Yeah. And this is a scientific chart. It matches the charts. This is scientific. This is not a Christian production. So there was wars, but there's never been something like World War I and World War II. There were earthquakes, but there's never been earthquakes like 93, 94, 95, 96. That's how many earthquakes take place in 98, 99, and 2000. Oh, I'm sorry. This is going all the way to 2020. 2010, we're 10 years away from us right now. Look how fast it's going. Looks like electrical currents. That's, again, I had another video from the first time. I was going to show it to you twice. But this is 120 years. Those are all the earthquakes in 120 years. And you compare that to what was going on before, like this. Boom! That's this part of the chart right there. That's that part of the chart. And so this is, again, I'm making a connection. There'll be earthquakes. Well, there's always been earthquakes. There'll be false Christs, rumors of wars. This is normal. But when you have world wars, when you have famines that we haven't talked about that yet, and earthquakes like this, this is the beginning of the birth pains, meaning something's about to happen. We're now at the stage where the next thing that would happen would be an invasion from the north before the tribulation begins. But we're there, unless it's going to get worse. I had another video, again, I'm not going to show it to you, but this is the other video. This was the first one I was going to show you. This is the first 100 years. You see how it starts again. This is the same video, just only goes to 2000. But that's how it started. Remember how it started. And I'm not going to make you watch it again, but it is. I wanted you to watch it twice, but we're out of time. You want to see it again? This one I showed you, Tony, this one. And then, all right, we're done. I'll quit this right here. I'll shut it off so you don't keep on. All right, we got to finish some more of this. Not finish, but we'll continue this more next week. The main thing we're looking at is, and I'm going to give you some more verses, the pre-trib events. Again, Jesus is coming back soon, but the world has certain things that we're watching for before. We need the Antichrist signing the treaty. We need the 10 toes or the 10 kings. We need apparently a one-world government controls the whole earth, and we definitely need an invasion from the north. And so you keep watching the news and seeing Syria and Turkey. I think Syria and Turkey came together with some kind of agreement yesterday about, you know, using forces against Israel from the north. And all that ties together with, you know, some things. We'll look at more prophecies. Not trying to date set. That'd be wrong. But we do want to be watching. And these are some things you can be looking for. We got much more to look at. We'll take care of this next week. I appreciate you being here. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into these things. We ask that we would handle them diligently, that we would continue to place our faith in Jesus Christ, knowing that his kingdom is coming, that he has things under control, that we are here for a purpose, not to be afraid and not just to enjoy life, but, Father, to live as a testimony to the world of who you are and what you are doing and the great hope you have for us in Jesus Christ. We do thank you again for the good things you've given to us, and ask that we'd use them responsibly. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.